Show me the jail. Show me the prisoner.
For fortune, go I. And on the eve of World Head and Neck Cancer Day, Bristol Myers Squibb, BMS, in partnership with patient groups, the Swallows and the Mouth Cancer Foundation, have just announced the results from a patient survey exploring the long-term burden of treatment on head and neck cancer patients. The numbers and statistics are quite staggering in all sorts of ways. There are around 11,900 new head and neck cancer cases in the UK every year, and the incidence has actually increased by 32% since the early 1990s. Now, to talk a little bit about this, and also how maybe patients are not being prepared for the impact on their quality of life following treatment, we're delighted to welcome patient ambassador for the Mouth Cancer Foundation, and indeed a survivor of mouth cancer herself. It's the wonderful Rachel Parsons. How are you, Rachel?
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Excellent. Great to speak to you, yourself. Now, again, we hear a great deal about the C word and the way in which we've worked through that, and we've certainly covered this in previous years with respect to the World Head and Neck Cancer Day and so on. But share with us your own story, if you will, Rachel, in terms of, you know, in a sense, having been a survivor, working through that, but the experience of actually having to go through it as well, because there are lots of changes and impacts that occur in your daily life, really.
Yeah. Well, my journey really started in August of 2008, when I was diagnosed with having mouth cancer, which was in the right side of my inside of my cheek, and was booked in then for surgery September, just literally a few weeks later. So the start of diagnosis to surgery was very, very quick. You didn't really have time to think of what was actually going to happen. You don't really take anything in. You hear the words cancer, and that's it. You don't hear anything else.
Yeah, I mean, the stress alone, I would have thought, is pretty much, I would say, unimaginable. But it's one of those things where you must have thought you're on a conveyor belt in many ways. Like, oh, fine, okay, right, that's okay. Let's move on to the next thing, etc. And there is that sort of lack of, or apparently, the lack of human interaction and empathy in betwixt times.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That, you know, it was literally bam, 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 bam. And going home and telling my husband that I'd got cancer and this is what was going to happen and it's going to be happening in a few weeks' time, it was just chaotic. You know, you don't really have that time to sit back and try and, you know, recognise what is actually happening to you.
Or even just actually process it, I mean, to use the vernacular. I mean, I was astounded to find that emotional and psychological support was only offered to 46% of patients, so less than half, effectively, get any even offer of the whole system. And maybe that has its own routine. When you bear in mind as well, presumably, Rachel, that actually it's so important to have a positive mental outlook as well, this is hardly going to impact or affect positively the patient's experience, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, I mean, myself and my husband and children didn't really have an awful lot of support, really. We literally just had to get on with it. The positivity came from my children were the things that kept me going. However, you know, myself and my husband, our relationship changed dramatically overnight because he had nobody to support him and I had nobody to support myself, and we didn't want to go to each other to add any extra stress on to each other, sort of thing. So, yeah, it was quite a traumatic experience to have when you're so solid with your partner, and then all of a sudden you're not so solid. Mm. And I found with lots of people that I've spoken to, you know, it is a case of cancer can destroy your relationship because they're not talking, and if you haven't got that support from somebody that you can go and talk to, it is really difficult because you do feel like you're on your own. Yeah,
absolutely. Now, Vinod Joshi, who back in 2004 actually helped establish the Mouth Cancer Foundation, a charity dedicated to raising awareness and supporting people with mouth cancer, throat and other head and neck cancers. This at least is an attempt, and obviously you're an ambassador for the aforementioned foundation. Is it enough, or is it a case of it's a bit like a sticking plaster on an open wound, really? We need much more.
Well, actually, Mouth Cancer Foundation were the ones that I could turn to, because at the time, 10 years ago, they were all that was there. And, you know, the support that I got from other head and neck patients from all over the world was absolutely amazing. Up until a couple of weeks ago, I'd actually found my post, and it sort of like brought it all back to, wow, I really was in a dark place. But these people that I didn't know did offer some support. You know, you can do this. You can do this. We're here for you. To have those words, "We're here for you," was fantastic. And, you know, even now, I will always highly recommend the Mouth Cancer Foundation. They've been fantastic throughout the years.
And as we said at the start of the piece, of course, the survey itself was actually developed and founded by Bristol-Myers Squibb together with the Swallows Head and Neck Cancer Patient Support Group. Are things getting slightly better? I mean, obviously, it's a dreadful challenge to be faced with in the first place, but would you say if you were speaking to your equivalent, Rachel, in the year 2019, do you think that they would actually be better supported and that actually there has been an improvement, or is it a case of we've still got an awfully long way to go?
I think there is a case of there's still a long way to go, because the 52% of patients reported their feelings of anxiety were before treatment, only reduced to 48% following the treatment. There is still a long way to go with the support. You know, the thing, what I find is, with what I do now, with raising the awareness of head and neck cancers, it's still... There is a lot more out there than what there was when I was diagnosed 10 years ago. There are a lot more support groups, especially on social media. There are a lot.
Yeah. Well, we can only hope that items such as the one we've actually just done will begin to raise the profile. Where would you suggest, Rachel, people should actually go to find out more about this particular thing? Would it be cancerresearchuk.org? Would that be your first start point? Would you go to Macmillan? Would we go to the Swallows? What would be your thoughts be?
I would recommend the Mouth Cancer Foundation. They have a great website, but also the Swallows. The gentleman that's founded the Swallows is also a head and neck cancer survivor. So he's very much like me. We've been there. And when I speak to people for the Mouth Cancer Foundation, because obviously I do the helpline for them, it's nice for them to say, wow, you actually do know what I'm going through. And that's how I know that I can help somebody, because you may have somebody that's on at the end of another helpline that has not really been there that can say, yes, I know what you're going through, but actually you don't. So myself and Chris from the Swallows, I know that, you know, people that need that advice can come to us and we can say, yes, we do know what you're going through. We can help you. And so to not have anybody be on their own.
Rachel Parsons, Patient Ambassador for the Mouth Cancer Foundation. I think more power to you, Rachel. Hopefully things will continue to improve. And if we look 10 years down the line, maybe we won't be having this conversation. Or if we are having this conversation, then it will all be demonstrate that there's been a good, solid improvement with respect to the whole thing.
Hope so. That would be brilliant.
Ah, festival, in all magical festival ways and so on. Well, it sounds great, but at the same time, if you're a parent, you might kind of think, I don't know, how do we prepare our children for festivals, which have changed possibly since back in the day with respect to Live Aid or Woodstock or various other bits and pieces. Actually, probably it'll be grandparents if you're dealing with Woodstock, never mind. Who better to actually talk about the tips for parents who are worried about ensuring that their teenagers have got enough cash for the weekend and so on and so forth than an actor extraordinaire, presenter extraordinaire, frankly, the best EastEnders actor that has ever been in so many ways. That's quite categorically so. But if you add to that the Richard Blackwood show himself, it is the awesome aforementioned Richard Blackwood. How are you, Richard?
You're going to have a great interview because that was a lovely intro.
Well, Richard, we always call them as we see it. That's the important thing.
I appreciate that, sir. Thank you.
Let's move on to the... I can't believe, actually, that you are approaching your fifth decade as well. That's astounding. To me, Richard, you'll always be about 26.
I will take that and receive that. But no, I'm actually 47.
Good leave. Good grief.
I'm actually three... I always say now I'm 3 years from 50. So that's...
There we are. Still,
it's very real.
We become more chronologically gifted. That's the important
thing. What I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this particular survey and challenge that's come through in terms of research by Vago that parents are quite worried about children going off to a festival, concerned about, obviously, drinks being spiked. I actually remember my own mother, God bless her, God rest her soul, when I actually headed off to London University back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. 1880s, obviously, aren't they? she was, beware, always make sure that, you know, if you're in this situation, drinks being spiked. It is a situation that still is there and is obviously cause for concern.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, but you mentioned Vago and the research that they've done, right? And it said that 29% of parents are more concerned with things that they've seen on TV in relation to festivals and things like that. I think the most important thing, I'm a parent myself, so I think the most important thing that you have to do is there is a part that you have to step back and allow your young adults to become adults and to have their first experiences. But I also would say that you have to do your due diligence to arm them as well. Give them the tools that they need in terms of making sure that they say that, you know, some of them lose their phones or they run out of money. So you've got to make sure that they're fully equipped with that. And also just let them know, look, you're going to be by yourself now and you've got to be vigilant. If you've got a drink, make sure that you watch that drink from the time you get it to the time that it's finished. You can't just put it down and come back. You know, it's like just things like that they have to be aware of just to get them ready for the outside world in general.
£75 per day seems to be the kind of cash target that we're looking for. I mean, back in the day, £75 per day, that's ridiculous.
You got that week when we were younger.
Exactly.
Things have changed.
But I suppose, again, you're looking at things like emergencies to work through process. I mean, it's fair to say most festival organisers are pretty together. I mean, we've just actually come out from the Country Music Festival of the wonderful Dixie Festival that was held in Essex that was there. And I think that was the first one that had been hosted. There are lots of others, V festivals and heaps of them are actually around, and they're pretty much good from that perspective. But as you rightly said, part of the challenge is maybe ensuring that when folk are actually out there, you are cautious and vigilant, and don't get completely carried away with the whole excitement of the thing.
I think that goes with anything. You know, when you're in that state of euphoria and you're enjoying yourself, especially when you're young, you can let things just pass you by. And I think, as I say, as a parent, that is where the concern is. But I think it's about being, sounds horrible to say a good parent, but you've got to be a strict parent in that sense. And say, look, as much as, you know, our parents used to say it to us, even if we was walking down the street or when we was walking to school, don't talk to strangers, don't do this, don't do that. These were things that our parents armed us with so that we got there as safe as we could. And I think it's the same. Make sure that, you know who your circle is, you know who's around you and things like that. I just think that, and then the other side of it is the trust that the parents have to have.
We live in a world, obviously, which is full of social media. In fact, many people actually said that, what's the point of going to festivals if you're just actually going to festivals to actually have Instagram opportunities to actually put in your Facebook site? Enjoy the moment of the festival.
Yeah.
It's the old sort of thing I often think, yeah, you're seeing this through the screen of your mobile phone, but surely, you know, just enjoy the moment for the time.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's a whole other story. Maybe you need to actually put together a new rap for that, Richard, and we can sort of develop that whole thing. Live in the moment.
Go 47, we'll see what happens. If I'm still in touch.
Listen, if Will Smith can do it,
that's
you can
true.
Do it.
No,
you
know, he's 50 now.
Exactly.
So that's,
and that's my point.
Yeah, no,
and to me, Richard, you will always be the Fresh Prince of London. That's
thank
the key
you
thing.
So
forget,
much.
Forget
I'm going to take that. I'm taking that as well. You're a lot of praise today at this time of morning. I like it.
That's important. In terms of people finding out about this research, top tips, etc., you already shared some of the key things from that point of view. Are there any kind of, if I should say, right, give me the three top things that you would recommend, Richard Blackwood, for your own children, etc., and obviously for teenagers who might be listening to this, or indeed their parents?
I think top tips. Number one, make sure that you know everybody in your crew, your friends, blah, 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 people that you trust. You know, that's the first thing, because, you know, that whole thing about people's drinks being spiked and so forth, you've got to have people around you. Maybe you're not the person that's looking at your drink at the time, but you've got your close friends right by you. You know that you're in a safe unit. That's the first thing. Make sure that every one of you, your phones are by you. So if you lose your phone, your friend's got your phone, you know, everybody's got the app now where it says find your phone and things like that. Make sure that you are, it's like, you know, it's like leaving your house, but making sure you've got all the things you need that will carry you through the day. And as I say, make sure that you have enough money to carry you through, because once you're there, you don't want to be strapped for cash and you're out there like that. That, you know, you're too far from home to be in a situation like that. But I think the most important thing is just making sure that you've got good friends around you to have your back. I think that's where you have to, for use of a better expression, police yourself and make sure you're policing each other.
And that, Richard, is the reason I still maintain you were robbed in the 11th series of Dancing on Ice. You're far better. Yeah. Just that wisdom alone. It's a case of take that, Sarah and Mark. You are much better from that point of view. It's a much better skater in that perspective.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And we shall motor on. Finally, a website. Where's the best place to go to find out further details about what we're talking about? And the AGO research. Or VAGO research.
VAGO. VAGO.com. Yes. Go to VAGO.com and all the research. Everything you need is on there. Everything you need.
Brilliant. Two final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning, Richard Blackwood?
I think so far it's the first and it's the best.
Oh, my word.
So
will you be kind enough to join us again in the near future? Will you come back sometime?
When you have me, it's cool. I'll probably be back on my 50th birthday.
Hey!
See what I did there?
Absolutely. Take care.
You too.
Stop.
splendid sound of Matthew's Southern Comfort, and of course a little think back to Woodstock back in the day, festival season with Richard Blackwood. Well, we've covered that. We had some very sage advice in terms of Richard's thoughts with respect to how to prepare their or his child and your children to actually deal with that. So we now move to a father and daughter, a dynamic duo who have also got well involved with respect to the joys of students travelling the world and saving thousands of pounds as well, because Global Grad, the UK's first university partner to offer worldwide travel alongside online study, has actually fired off. And we're delighted to welcome Lincoln businessman extraordinaire Steph Wright and indeed his daughter Georgia. But Steph, we're coming to you first. How are you, Steph?
Very well indeed, thank you.
Excellent. So great material from this point of view. This is very exciting in terms of the way in which you can combine travel to exotic location with good accommodation and study for degrees at the same time. So share with us, what was the dream behind Global Grad?
What's the dream behind Global Grad?
Or the inspiration,
well,
perhaps.
Yeah, I'll give you the quick background story. I have four children. Three went off to university. And Georgia, youngest daughter, she got her A-levels, got offered a place at Northumbria University doing a business degree, and decided to go off travelling around the world in a gap year prior to going to university. She rang me from Southeast Asia. She was volunteering on an elephant sanctuary in Cambodia. And I had the most interesting conversation with her. This was about 3 years ago. And she'd all of a sudden grasped an understanding of the sort of sustainability of the project that she was working on. She said to me, "I just want to travel now. I don't want to go to university." And I sort of realised over a period of time that she was learning so much from travelling, but would never get any sort of formal qualification from it. So that was really the seed of the idea for Global Grad, was how could you actually combine the experience and the contacts that you make from travelling the world with actually a formal education.
The company established, of course, in June 2018, and it's been growing ever since, really. 2,000 UK students, have I see, already registered their interest in becoming a Global Grad. So, again, citizens of the planet. This can only be good news as well in terms of breaking down barriers between different cultures, different environments as well, I would have thought.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a very important part of it. I think, you know, for people to be able to understand other cultures, you have to go and live and meet people. And so what we try to create is an experience that's very different from just going on holiday, where you go and see tourist attractions in a location. What students do is they'll stay in a specific location for a month. Whilst they're there, they'll be studying their online courses in co-working spaces, where they'll be rubbing shoulders with local entrepreneurs, people working for large companies that's travelling around, and volunteer on projects, and very much become part of that community during the time they're there. And then we organise a road trip, which takes them from that first location to another location. So our pilot group went out in January. They spent 4 weeks in a place called Chiang Mai in Thailand. Then they travelled through Cambodia and spent another 4 weeks in a place called Da Nang, which is in the middle of Vietnam. Again, working in the co-working spaces and doing all sorts of volunteering projects, doing litter picks on the beaches, working with animals, and all sorts of different projects that were happening within Da Nang. And then they did a final road trip, which took them down to Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, where they studied in a large co-working space called WeWork, right in the heart of Malaysia, got an understanding of that culture.
Steph, it sounds wonderful. If we can have a few words now with co-founder and indeed locations development manager and your daughter, Georgia Wright, that'd be wonderful, because I just want to get a different perspective, and then we'll come back to you, Steph, in a few moments. So if you pass the connection over to Georgia, who of course said the wonderful words, "There are thousands of accredited courses available online from the world's top universities for global grads to choose from, and the number of students choosing this form of education is growing rapidly." Georgia, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hiya, I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. So we've heard from your dad in terms of how the thing has developed and continues to develop from that point of view. Locations Development Manager, have you considered perhaps going to the Antarctic or the Arctic, or is that just a step too far away? Are you going to stay with basically Asia and so on?
So every semester we plan to bring out a new location. Mm-hmm. So in September we'll just be in Southeast Asia again.
Right.
And then in January we plan to start up in Europe. So we'll be going to Lisbon, Prague and Budapest as our three main locations. Yeah. And then on study breaks we'll be going road tripping through various of the locations around Europe.
I know many of our own students have sort of benefited from taking a year out and often come back better for having done that. From your own perspective, was this something which, in a sense, when you'd experienced this, when you were looking through that whole process, you thought, actually, this is a wonderful way of actually showing that young people can get proactive with activities and, of course, benefit so that when they come back, they're already really qualified and sorted out and ready to go in terms of the careers that they're looking for?
Yeah, definitely. And I wish that this had been around a few years ago when I made the step to go off travelling. Because obviously I just got the travel experience. I didn't come back home with any sort of qualification or a degree. So it's awesome that people can really get the best of both worlds now with Global Grad and get the travel experience, get the life experience, the career, the volunteering, everything that they do out there and come home with a degree. I wish this opportunity was available a few years ago because it would definitely have been perfect for me.
Okay, so in terms of your own experience, and you already alluded to some of the ways forward for that, what is it that kind of makes this just a little bit special? I mean, what would be the ideal profile for somebody who might be listening to this? They might have done their A-levels, they might sort of be thinking about taking that year out, etc. What sort of profile do you think would be best suited, Steph, for taking up this opportunity?
Really anyone that is perhaps leaving school, an 18-year-old, or even someone that's gone to traditional university and is wanting to do further education and study a master's. There's a massive growth on online master's degrees, especially at the minute. Or even if someone just isn't quite sure what they want to study, and they can come on Global Grad and do a range of totally free short courses in various subject areas, and they can get a taste of different subjects, get a taste of travel, and then perhaps come home and go to traditional university if that's for them, or continue with us and do an online degree once they've found their preferred subject area. So it really does suit anyone and everyone that wants to do something different, wants to do more than just being, if you like, stuck in the same city, doing the same as everyone else. They've got a taste for doing something different, taste for adventure.
We live obviously in a world of social media, so presumably, as we've launched with the with Global Grad, you have your Instagram, you have your Twitter accounts and various other bits and pieces. Where can people actually find you in the World Wide Web?
Yeah, so we're all over Instagram especially, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube. We've got so many videos out there at the minute. At Global Grad HQ is our Instagram handle. And so we've got loads of videos from our previous semester of us studying in a co-working space and volunteering, road trips. You'll see my face all over it. Definitely check them out because they really give you a taste of what it's all about. And you'll meet all the students through that too. And we've got a couple of them coming back, which is super exciting.
Excellent. As we say, Asia is the location for September this year. Then January, it's Europe and Asia, as you mentioned. September next year, Europe, Asia and Australia, Bali. And you intend to actually cover all continents. So if people are sort of thinking, I really want to go to Peru or to Chile. That's presumably the case of just keep on waiting and who knows what could actually manifest.
Yeah. So if students want to do a three-year degree and they join Global Grad for every semester if they'd like, they'll then have covered every continent in the world by the end of three years, so that's pretty amazing.
Any plans for the moon or Mars, given that we're talking about sort of heading to space tourism with Elon Musk and company in the near future? Perhaps that's there. Yeah. That's just, I'm just still thinking it's location manager. Always thinking of extraterrestrial things as well. Listen, Georgia, it's been wonderful sharing some thoughts with good stuff. You can pass us back to Steph now. We'll just have a few thoughts from that perspective.
Yep.
And just finalise some of these bits and bobs. Steph, it does seem absolutely ideal. And again, I think the fit is positive. What's the support structure like in terms of, because you know, we hear a great deal in the 21st century about our youngsters when they go to university, perhaps they're suffering anxiety, they're concerned about that. Is there a support network with respect to the programme that means that parents don't have to worry that their students will not be looked after properly and catered for by Global Grad?
Yeah, we're obviously very aware of all sorts of issues that students have. And so we've got a support team back in the UK. We've also got well-trained location managers, which are going to be there, and the students are going to have access to whilst they're travelling. And we also very much bring the group together and say that they need to support each other. You know, at the end of the day, when students go off to university, there isn't always a brilliant support network there for them. They have to work out how to deal with issues themselves. So because we're dealing with fairly small groups of students in each location, then, you know, we obviously very focused on safety. We ensure that students understand about buddying up when they're going off and gaining all sorts of experiences. So keeping in touch with people so that everybody knows where they are. So there's all that sort of safety stuff that we instill in them. But we also want them to have the freedom to go off and explore and become independent travellers. So it's getting that balance right between having the correct support there, but also allowing them the freedom to be individuals and be confident travellers.
I think had the name not already been used for the novel a few years ago, maybe The Right Stuff would have been an ideal sort of company name, but perhaps not. It's just a thought there. Globalgrad.com, of course, is the best place to go to find out further information, presumably, Steph.
I'm just going to make a point about who we're working with in Lincoln's, because obviously this is...
It's Lincoln and the world. We have lots of listeners in Los Angeles and New York as well, so who knows where this could end up, really. So just
excellent. Well, in Lincoln, we're developing an excellent relationship with the university and with Lincoln College. Lincoln College are keen to get involved in developing more online courses. I think there's a massive opportunity for universities and colleges to develop more content online. Mm. At the moment, you've got 6 million students in the USA that study their degrees online. In the UK, it tends to be more mature students that decide to go down the route of online education. And so there is a big opportunity for universities and colleges to deliver more online content.
Well, certainly that's a good thing that we're adding towards. Presumably you will have spoken to one of my colleagues, David Cobham, I would have thought, in amongst other things at the university. Or maybe not. I don't know. I know.
Absolutely.
Yes, he's been connected with our KDU Penang material, amongst other things. Steph, it's been wonderful sharing some thoughts with you, with yourself and, of course, Georgia. We wish you well. Again, a reminder, it's globalgrad.com. And hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Brilliant. Good to speak to you.
Five months, 2 weeks, 2 days. My loving baby's been gone. 5 months, 2 weeks, 2 days. My loving baby's been gone. If you see my baby, please send her home for me. Hurry, oh home, baby. 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 Baby,
worry, oh, oh, baby.
Hurry on, 5 months, 2 weeks, 2 days. Hurry on, 5 months, 2 weeks, 2 days. Hurry on, 5 months, 2 weeks.
About to lose my mind. Home.